couldn't ask for better weather. Go Chicago. A little disappointing about the New York Mets, but we'll get over it, you know. Glenn. So today what I'd like to do is sort of give you, you know, even though the title of the presentation symposium is about approaches, what I'm hoping will happen today is we'll talk a little bit more about a methodological approach that each of you can think about using. So today we've got a, besides myself, I'm counting myself out of this, a really wonderful presentation where you've got people who are really focused on the data, collecting information and trying to make it better in terms of building a framework that provides what we've been using in our national center called community health inclusion. So when we think about building an inclusion science agenda, I think it's really, really important to think about these four steps. For some of you who are a little bit younger than me, the first step is, you know, everything today that gets any recognition in public health has the term guideline in front of it or strategy. And it's no different for public health and CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So the first thing we need to think about is if we're going to build an ecosystem that's really disability friendly and inclusive in all areas of health and wellness, we've got to think about how do we develop guidelines that will have some level of reputability or credibility with an organization like the Institute of Medicine. So I think you're going to hear a little bit about that in a few moments. The second step is, you know, there used to be a director of the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities by the name of Jose Cordero. And back in 2000, I remember Jose saying, whatever gets measured gets funded. If you don't measure it, you're never going to get funding for it. So if we're going to build a disability policy agenda within public health, we got to measure it. So Yohai is going to talk a little bit about the measurement tool that was just published. And then the third step is demonstrating success. You know, you've got to be able to look for those elements of success in your community, places where you're seeing changes occur. We haven't had that opportunity over the last two decades that I've been involved with CDC because we fund projects, particularly state disability and health projects, for 3 years, and then some of those projects go away, some new ones come on board, some of the same ones stay in perpetuity and get refunded over the years, but there's no archive of information. And some of that information, if you mined it, you'd find these enormous successes. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel, right? What we want to do is take the wheel and adapt it and build, like they do in Alzheimer's research or cancer. They build and they work with each other until they get a level of science that meets everyone's needs, our focus being on people with disabilities. So the health disparities, for those again that are younger, I apologize for the older folks in the room. You know, you've seen this already. Obesity is a problem. In fact, I see Susan Havekamp in the room. She has one of the best papers out there over the last year looking at the health disparities in people with disabilities, and she sub-broke out that with intellectual disabilities. So that was really wonderful. And again, physical activity was a problem. Obesity was a problem. On average, people with disabilities have more secondary health conditions, and I'll show you that in a minute. Physical activity rates are lower in all ages and disability groups, and it's really an important element and a risk factor, you know, for people who don't do it. And then, sadly, I don't know, this was amazing, but today in the New York Times, I opened up the Times and they talked about a study that was just done at Syracuse and another school where they sent letters out to employers, indicating that they're interested in a position, and they sent the same letter out. One letter said, I have Asperger's syndrome. Another letter said, I have a physical disability. A third letter said, I have no disability. And there was a disproportionately higher rate of interviews than those who had no disability. And it was in the New York Times today. So there's a lot of discrimination without even interviewing the candidate. And the other part of the study, which was really interesting, is the candidates with the disabilities had more experience than the candidates who didn't, and the candidates who did not got the interview. So we've got a real bias in our society. And why is that important to health promotion? Because when you think about it, if people are not working, and we've only got about 34% of the population in the U.S. who have a disability are employed, you got a real problem there with what are they doing most of the day. Now, the other thing is, in a paper we published in 2011, I had my doctoral student go through this year, and I looked at secondary conditions, and they're really staggering in terms of the rates of secondary conditions. And as you know, there's a big controversy. Are they secondary conditions? Are they chronic conditions? Are they associated conditions? That's not the point of this slide. The point of the slide is to show that if you're writing a grant or you're trying to get some policy generated through a community health inclusion program that's receiving funding from CDC, you need to understand these data and you need to be able to use them to show that many of the health promotion programs that are being offered to the general population can impact this. And then when you flip this around and you look at the psychosocial secondary conditions, they're even worse. And again, it's on the data that we have between people and with or without disabilities, it's problematic. So there's a general overarching problem with health. And of course, our major disease-related costs are higher in people with disabilities versus those who don't. And whether you want to look at this from aging with a disability or aging into a disability, those lines are going to merge. The Venn diagram is going to overlap, and we're going to have a high generation of people who have multiple chronic health conditions, multiple chronic diseases, and are obviously going to be able to impact the healthcare system in our society. So the answer to all of this is a public health infrastructure, a public health ecosystem that's inclusive of people with disabilities, and that's what we're going to hear about today. Now, it's great to get evidence-based programs. I have an NIH review that came in Friday night. I'm scared to death to open it. It's for an R01, doing a randomized clustered trial using clinics in Birmingham. Who knows what the score is, but I'm writing randomized controlled trials. But what I'm trying to relate here is that they're very costly, and often they never see the light of day. Many of these studies that we've reviewed over the last couple of years are underpowered. For those of you who don't know that term, it just means statistically you don't have enough of a sample size. There's a lot of dropouts, so it's problematic. And there's other problems, limited access to subjects, large intra and intervariability conducted in isolated environments. So 5 years ago, we were funded by the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research to develop these guidelines that I told you about earlier. And we have several people who are experts on that committee, including my good friend and colleague in the back of the room, Glenn White, who is on the panel, Amy Raworth, who is also on the panel, and we developed through an expert panel and a number of elements that Carrie will describe in a few minutes, these grades, which stands for guidelines, adaptations, guidelines, recommendations, adaptations, including disability. This is a framework, and I want you to keep that in mind because you can use it. It's a potential opportunity for you to use it to develop your own interventions that are adapted rather than prospective in terms of randomization and all that. You can do this in the real-world setting. It has four parts, which Carrie will talk about: focus groups, an online portal for input, expert panel, and systematic review. And the ultimate goal is to develop these inclusion strategies. Now, what's beautiful about this is that when you develop guidelines, you've got to have a very good set of criteria so that each guideline you develop or each adaptation meets the same standard. So we develop a very nice, Carrie and the team developed a very nice set of inclusion guideline criteria. There are 20 of them, and each of the guidelines, recommendations, and adaptations have to meet all of those criteria or else they don't qualify as being evidence-based and associated with some hierarchy of evidence. So what we've done in the last couple of months is we've developed this NICPAD knowledge adaptation and translation model. I'd like to recognize Amy Raworth in the room, who's the associate director of NICPAD, and Allison Hoyt, who's also in the room and is our top-notch information expert and specialist. But as you know, many of these projects couldn't be done if they didn't have the right staff in mind. So these are really wonderful people to work with who have helped to develop this model. And just to kind of break out the model, the way that the center is now sort of being reformulated is we begin with this area called knowledge creation, adaptation, and customization. So we're looking for information, those successes I spoke about earlier, that would come into the center, and then we would have some formal way of developing a matrix of information that has, an emerging level of evidence, moderate evidence, high evidence, has it been replicated, so on and so forth. But the whole idea is to bring it into the center and let the staff kind of work with it in customizing it and then putting it back out into your respective states and communities. And then from there, we also have a sort of a template for how you get this information out, very important. Implementation, which we can't talk about today. We're hoping that NICPAD can serve as your facilitator and help you implement certain things. And then finally, once these activities and programs and adaptations are implemented in the community, they would come back in and we would capture that information, and then we would upgrade the actual content associated with each of these guidelines. Again, I'm not going to talk about this today, but we have a model that we've adapted from Ian Graham, who's one of the top guys in the field in knowledge translation. Ian has this great model called I Can Implement, And we've been given permission to do the same thing for those of you who are interested in implementing a program or one of the grades in your community. It's called I Can Implement Grades. So Cary is currently involved in developing that structure. And then this year, we have this great inclusive community health implementation package that Amy and her staff, including Allison, are assembling. So we've got packets of materials now that we want to share with you. And if you're interested in knowing more about these will be coming on to the website in a very short period of time. But they're very good packets of information that deal with the funding opportunity announcement that was provided by CDC. Finally, as I go through the last couple of sets of slides, the team up here came up with this sort of framework on how do you think we can start to look at using this information in a local community program. So first of all, you have to start with something related to building partnerships, coalition building. Doesn't necessarily mean you're building a separate coalition. It could be you have a disability and health coalition or an advisory board, and you decided now as part of your long-range plan that you want inclusive health coalition to be part of that subcommittee, so they would be primarily focused on obesity prevention tools. So again, not reinventing a coalition that already exists, but try to find a coalition that's funded by CDC to do this. And then NICPAD would do the on-site training for you. We do have funding in our grant to help you do that. We can come out and help you do the training. We could help with the data analysis, and Yohai will talk about the CHI in a few moments. We could help you plan and interpret and connect you to the world of providers who are not doing anything in disability. So we've got those connections, and as a national center, it's our responsibility to make sure that these national organizations understand and value the importance of inclusion. And then the technical support, we have an 800 number, we have a website, we have chat rooms, we have social media, so we can help you with any kind of tools you need in that area. We can help you manage the performance using the CHI and other tools, but Vijay will talk about his barriers tool. And we can capture the knowledge, and then ultimately we can create higher levels of innovation. So this is the science. This is the implementation science framework that we hope to share with you this year. Anyone who needs information on this can contact us, and we can do it by phone, we can do a webinar. But the most important point of this is that without your help and without you using it, it really becomes a static entity. So we want NICPAD to become a dynamic, interactive center, kind of like a wiki, where you participate as much as we do, and the interaction and the intersection of both of us really sells it. And the levels of outcomes are there. So the CHI will help you with level one outcomes, which are environmental changes. Level two are your systems changes, something happening in the transportation system, in the school system, in the public health system, in the healthcare system. The third level of change is the policy, right? You get systems change, and now a school says, I'm going to hire two adapted physical activity people because we've seen the commitment now and the importance of recreation and sport. And finally, and this is where we often start with the randomized controlled trial, we want that individual to change his or her behavior, and it doesn't work real well because these studies end. And when these studies end, these are millions and millions of dollars, they never see the light of day. Rarely do you see a study transferred into the community. So let's start from the back end and work our way front. If we need a randomized controlled trial, let's first set the environment right. Let's get the system set up. And then we can come back and say, okay, now we've got the community. We're still having problems. We can't figure out why people are not accessing. And then we can look at the randomized controlled trial. So to me, it makes much more sense to start from the back end and go to the front. And I said that in a meeting in Israel. My good friend Tamar Heller was in the room, and she just, people were upset because they're all, physical medicine rehab. Randomized controlled trials was what they have learned in PT school. So, she sort of defended me when she got up and did her presentation. She said, well, I don't think Jim's talking about not doing randomized controlled trials anymore. Right, Jim? You're not saying that, are you? And she kept looking. I said, no, I'm not. But what I'm suggesting is that with implementation science, which is the space that Cary's been in over the last 2 years, there's really an opportunity to do studies in real-world setting where they have a greater impact. And now you've got NICPAD to be able to collect and archive that. So the next time CDC comes out with an FOA or the NIH, they can come back to us. And with the kind of algorithms we can build today with the technologies, we could tell them instantaneously where the successes were, what the dosing of the intervention was, how did they adapt the program, what guidelines were used, and how do you keep this thing going in what we refer to as sustainability. That's what the center is all about. That's the way it's moving. And I hope you become part of that transformation, because without you, it can't be done. So finally, You know, we've been thinking about this. Nick Pitt has kind of gotten a new home between a university and a wonderful internationally known foundation. And so the theoretical thing, and Amy and Allison haven't seen this yet, is to kind of look at how do we bridge the science to practice. And I'd like feedback from you. This is all theoretical, but I'd like to know is maybe because these groups that we target are so distinctly separate that we really need almost all of the tools that we're developing to be customized for each of these groups. So healthcare, you know, I talk a lot with PTs and OTs. We have a paper in review, and they're looking for how do you get people out of hospitals who just had a stroke or a head injury or spinal cord injury or a hip replacement. That model can be built for them. Other people contact and say, hey, you know, I'm in a disability health program. I love, you know, there's a new program in town. I'd love to adapt it. What do you have available? So it's just kind of a thought process here. Again, grades is a framework, and it's also a tool that you can use that will allow you to go from the lowest level to the highest level in terms of making sure that program or that guideline is inclusive. It's the source code, and NICPAD is considered the implementation element engine. So all of the elements that NICPAD has developed in the last 17 years now can fit into one of these grades, into some element of the grades. The highest tiered evidence, so here's an example. The Administration on Aging in the Administration for Community Living came out with this 60-some-odd page report and said there are 46 evidence-based programs. The average length of the programs was 6 to 12 weeks. There was no description of adaptations for older adults with disabilities, and there was no description of the life after the intervention. So 46 programs that cost probably hundreds of millions of dollars to fund in randomized controlled trials, and no adaptations that I could see anywhere on the website to develop integration or inclusion of people with disabilities. The grades, which Carrie will talk about in 2 minutes, less than that, are based on this very good MMWR report. They looked at all of the systematic evidence and they came out with 24 recommendations. Recently, the CDC has funded three programs, one called Partnerships to Improve Community Health, PICH, National Implementation and Dissemination Centers. American Planning Association got a grant. The American Heart Association got a grant. WIC, Women, Infant, and Children got a grant. And there were two others, SOFI, the Society for Public Health Education, and one other group. But there were five groups that got funded to develop coalitions to promote community health. Not community health inclusion, but community health. So a great place to start if you're thinking about adapting, using grades, and then trying out one of these programs. And then finally, we just hired someone to assist Carrie and I in coming out with a manual that will sort of be the complement to the CDC manual for obesity prevention guidelines, recommendations, adaptations, including disability. So this is just a mock-up of the cover, but it'll be a 40-50-page manual, just like what the CDC came out with, and it'll have all kinds of elements associated with adaptation. And then Yohai's going to talk about the Community Health Inclusion Index in a minute. And last, I constantly bring this up when I go to sessions. I talk about this issue, and this is something we learned a lot about when I was at the University of Illinois at Chicago with a good friend of mine, Fabricio Balcazar. But, you know, when you think about it, the diagram and sort of the centerpiece here is if we could work together, you know, with those who are in and focused on minorities like these REACH programs, race, ethnicity, approaches to community health, you know, we could have a much better society that includes everyone. So we shouldn't be separating ourselves by this is a disability, this is a race issue, this is an ethnic issue, this is a poverty issue. And I've been trying to get, you know, CDC to think about this. But if you put everybody sort of in the same framework and you develop adaptations and guidelines that have a level of evidence, then it really hits everyone, doesn't it? Because, you know, if you deal with the barriers, then the barriers might be different for a person who lives in a certain community versus someone who has a physical or cognitive disability. So we need to begin to get this word out at this conference and in our papers that there's a way to do health inclusion where it doesn't impose any hardship on the provider, and at the end of the day, really speaks to the Americans with Disabilities Act and its 25th year anniversary that all public health programs should have a level of inclusion, and now there's no excuse. And this gentleman, whether he's considered to have a disability or not, he will soon have it. He'll end up with cancer, he'll end up with heart disease, he'll end up with stroke, or he'll end up with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And when he does, he now loses access to whatever potential opportunities are to change his behavior. So disability looks very different in our society, and we just need to keep spending that message here at CDC. Everybody thinks of disability in their own framework, but it's not true. It's totally not true. In fact, if people think of it as, you know, sort of, you know, you could have a chronic condition and end up with a disability, or you could have a disability and end up with a chronic condition, it does not make a bit of difference if you have a program that has the elements of inclusion. And how do you do that? You develop guidelines, recommendations, and adaptations that include people with disabilities, and then you test them, and ultimately at the end of the day, you've got something that either works or doesn't work, but that you can build your base from for future intervention. So finally, Mahatma Gandhi said once, we must be the change we wish to see in the world, and I think we will do that thanks to these wonderful colleagues of mine. Thank you.